This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
I'm Brian Tetta, executive producer of The View. It's Thursday, and I'm here with Alyssa Farah Griffin. This is Behind the Table. Hello, Alyssa.
Hello, Brian.
This is exciting because it's the first day of holidays at The View. We came out, had a big walk-on to Candy Cane Lane, and the set was decorated. Do you like this time of year?
I am obsessed with Christmas. And I have to say, the set, they outdid themselves this year. It looks so incredible. I'm like a Christmas starts the minute Thanksgiving ends. Honestly, I would probably start sooner if my husband would allow me to. It's the best time of year. You feel good. The smells, the music, the food, the whole thing.
So I really get into Christmas, but I feel like Thanksgiving is being like taken away from us. Like it's just disappearing completely. So I've been doing in my house, no Christmas music until after Thanksgiving, no decorations. My daughters and my wife have been sneaking Christmas music since Halloween.
Okay, I'm the same. And my husband is like you. He's like, it's unfair to Thanksgiving. You can't bypass it. But let me tell you, as a new New Yorker, one of my favorite things is New York embraces Christmas. Like, literally, I drove past Macy's on Halloween, and they were putting up the decorations.
It's so good.
Hudson Yards put them up before Thanksgiving. I love it. People are happier. We need that.
It's nice around the show. I think having the decorations up and the music and the giveaways every day is really fun.
This is literally the weirdest show on television because we seamlessly go from like one, you know, super heavy topic to something just incredibly light, and we have to somehow do it smoothly and stay happy with each other while having strong opinions, and somehow it works.
Yeah, thank God for long commercial breaks to be palate cleansers from topic to topic. But anyway, I'm glad to have Christmas arrive at The View and holidays arrive at The View, and we've got Hanukkah next week and Christmas coming soon. It's going to be great. We have a lot of fun.
I can't wait.
All right, so The View's Pooch Pageant. Talk about your holidays. This is happening very soon, and there's been a lot of competition brewing. I'm not sure how aware you are of how much the other hosts are talking about this. We had Sunny on, very nervous about Herbie.
As she should be.
So
he is the underdog, if you will. He's probably the least famous of the pets of co-hosts. He's a puppy. He's only a year old. But this dog is remarkable. And it's personal for me because in the Westminster Kennel Club dog show, the Shih Tzu beat the Havanese. Now, my little Havanese is coming back with a vengeance. He's coming for Bernie Behar. I think we can prove that Havanese's are the best among the toy breed.
Oh, wow.
And I would just know, for historic context, Barbara Walters was a Havanese lover.
All right, so there we go.
Yeah, there's a view history with Havanese's. He is the cutest thing. He does have a special trick that I'm hoping he performs. He may perform one of his other tricks, which is occasionally going potty places he's not supposed to. So we have that to look forward to.
As David Letterman used to say before pet tricks, we'll have to have the urine-proof carpet out there. But so my first big job in television was producing stupid pet tricks for David Letterman. This was the thing.
And that's so cool. I love that.
I used to go around the country, and this is before YouTube. I used to have to go and hold auditions around the country looking for the best performing dogs or birds or cats or anything else. So it would be me in like a used car lot in Pittsburgh. And there'd be 100 people there, one by one, doing tricks, and the dog's not actually performing or doing anything impressive. If I got one trick for a long 100 dog audition, it was a huge win for me. But because of that, I know it gets like, you know, dogs don't always perform under the lights on television with an audience clapping for them and everything else. So anything can happen.
It will be a high stakes show. My little guy is still learning. I would say he's naughty, but has a good heart.
All right.
So I'm curious to see if he even, you know, does he make it to where he's supposed to on the stage? Does he bark? He's a humper. Sorry in advance. We may need to, you know, bleep out some of his activity on the screen. But he's a love bug.
My prediction for this is just pure chaos for yes. 5 to 6 minutes, yes. and we'll see who's
Not
standing
to mention,
at the end.
Sunny's two bear dogs are going to be
Sunny's
there.
Bringing two dogs because she wants an extra dog in this fight, mm-hmm. And she's cheating basically. She's bringing two dogs because she's Sunny, and she wants to get ahead. And then, but she's one of her dogs has a show dog lineage apparently.
Of course it does.
Of course it does. And it's a Nepo baby dog, mm-hmm. but she's mostly worried about yours. Joy, nothing but confidence. Anna's working the edges, trying to find like an in with the producer. Like, well, what exactly is going to happen? It's.
Yeah. I've got something up my sleeve, and you just wait. I'm saying it now. Herbie Griffin is the underdog.
All right.
To win this competition.
I love it. All right, we'll see what happens. All right, so moving on to another favorite Alyssa topic, Bravo. You are a resident Bravo watcher. What is happening right now in the Bravo universe?
So I am living for Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. It is back with a vengeance. And there's been speculation. One of the longest standing stars of the show, Kyle Richards, and her longtime husband have separated. Honestly, for Bravo TV couples, they always seemed like the strongest. There was a really just like fun, healthy, happy relationship there. Mm-hmm. So people were really surprised to hear it. But there's kind of an emerging storyline where Kyle is very close with this country singer, Morgan Wade, who's beautiful, super talented. They say they're just friends, but it seems to be giving that there may be a romance there.
Ooh.
And I'm reading all the tea leaves. I'm looking at it, and there's chemistry. And I was talking to my husband, who could not care less about Bravo and has no idea the people I'm talking about. But I said to him, I blurted out, I was like, you know, if for any reason we ever ended, I think I would go for a woman.
Really?
And he was like fascinated to hear that. But I think there is something to be said. If you had a very healthy relationship with a man, but then it fell apart, maybe try something totally different.
That's interesting.
I do pay attention to listener feedback.
Yes. And, what are you hearing?
Mostly all positive, but I think some folks think that my obsession with Bravo is perhaps a bit unserious or immature. Now, I would like
really?
To explain how I got into Bravo.
Please.
It was when I was working at the Pentagon, and day in and day out was war. It was airstrikes. It was attacks. It was worried about friends who were in military theater, and it was heavy. And I would go home, and I was just like, how do I unwind? My best friend, who she works in the private sector, but at the Pentagon, she's like, you need to just watch. You need to binge some naughty reality TV, and got me hooked on all these Bravo shows. It was my way of turning my brain off and kind of living vicariously. It's a guilty pleasure. I don't actually spend a ton of time thinking about these people's lives. Only like a quarter of my time. But that's what it was. And I actually think it's fun escapism.
Yeah,
I need it in my life.
I read comic books and watch football.
Exactly.
I mean, that's pretty much, yeah, that's what I need too. Everyone's got to have a thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, I didn't know that listeners felt that way.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm missing it. All right.
But then others love Bravo as well. So.
I think a lot of people in our audience are engaged.
Solidarity.
That's the great thing about our audience, honestly. They engage on different things. And that's the great thing about The View is we can be so many different things on any given day, as we saw today,
exactly.
Which is pretty cool. All right. Well, in a similar kind of relationship-y place, there was a hot topic that ended up on the cutting room floor this morning. These are often my favorite hot topics. And this one was a viral Instagram stat. It was from 2014, but it was a survey of 1,000 women. And it revealed that 50% of those women admitted to having a backup partner in mind. So basically somebody that's like there, you know, if this doesn't work out, I've got my backup ready. Now, you've been married for 2 years. Did you ever have a backup in mind?
Okay. So yes, in dating, I always had a backup. You do not have a backup in marriage. Like
right.
Justin is my one and done and that's that. But when I was dating, for me, it was actually like it was like a self-preservation mechanism, because if I was really into someone but not sure if it was going to work out, I'd mm-hmm. usually have the backup guy in mind so I wouldn't be as devastated if it didn't work out. It was honestly more of just a like making sure I come out fine on the other side of it. My girlfriends, I think they called it like you had a rotation. Like it was, you know, this is the main guy you're interested in, but, you know, this guy can buy me a drink until the other person makes it, you know, Instagram official.
So this article, so it was about 50% admitted to having a fallback partner, such as a gym buddy or an ex-boyfriend. They're plan Bs, basically,
yes.
is what we're looking at here. And surprisingly, 1 in 10 women had disclosed that their plan B had already professed their love
Yeah, it's usually the guy who's crazy about you, but you're not quite as interested.
Wow.
But they can definitely, you know, be an ego boost on the backside of a breakup. It's actually kind of mean if I think about it.
Yeah, a little
bit. Did you ever have a plan B?
I never had. I had plan A's that I was all in for.
Yeah.
And then when it didn't work out, you know, I'd take another look around. But I never had a plan B while I was in it. I did text my wife this article yesterday when it came out. And I respond, and I asked, did you have a plan B? And she immediately wrote back, I have three. So that was nice.
I love it.
Yeah. She's a peach. All right. So this is exciting. Tomorrow, you and a few of our other hosts are going to the White House holiday party. Now, this is your first time back at the White House since leaving the Trump administration. How do you feel about it? It's very different, I would think.
Yes. I'm excited to go. So I think all the hosts were invited last year. I chose not to go. I'm a lot of frequently a Biden critic, and you know, I left under, you know, very sad circumstances, if you want to put it that way, for the country, for like America and democracy. And I was like, it's not my time. Now I was kind of excited to go back. I've struck up a friendship with Kate Bedingfield, who is Biden's White House comms director.
Yes.
She left a couple months ago, and we've kind of just bonded over the things that, like, take the politics out of it. There are just certain functions of that job and of working in any White House that you're going to have to do, whether you're right, left, center, Republican, Democrat. And it's a special place. It's America's house. It's the people's house. So I am actually excited to go back. I also am obsessed with the First Lady's Christmas decorations. I think Dr. Biden did a really, really good job this year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like classic, like, Americana Christmas, like, just, you know, just totally classic, nothing over the top, not trying to be too fancy, but still elegant. So I loved how it looked. I'm excited to go. It'll be weird, though. The White House is like one of the only jobs in America where, you know, I worked there twice because I worked for the vice president for 2 years and then I worked for the former president for about a year. So I spent 3 years of my life working in that building and on that campus. And you get to know the staff, the Navy mess staff, the Secret Service agents, the White House medical office. I got to be really friendly with them because we're getting COVID tested every day. But unlike most jobs where you can go back and see your old office or check in with your old friends who are still there, that doesn't exist in the White House.
It's all new.
Yes, it's all new. Also, you can't just go back unless you're invited. So it's just gonna be interesting, and I'm excited. I thought it was very gracious of them to invite me as somebody who, you know, worked for the former administration. And it'll be fun being there with other co-hosts.
I certainly don't want to compare the two in any real way, but the only similar experience I had was when I worked for David Letterman for 11 years and I was at the Ed Sullivan Theater, and I love that place so much.
Iconic.
And then Meghan McCain was here and she was a guest on Stephen Colbert and she asked me to go with her. So I went to the Stephen Colbert show and it was like watching a new family living in my childhood home. It was such a weird, visceral experience for me. Like, I had like a stomach ache the whole time. Everybody was new. They spruced the place up a little bit. Mm. Everything was in the wrong place. It was traumatic for me.
It's weird. And I'm going to be going in like a visitor's entrance, not having my blue badge that gets you to any nook and cranny of the White House you want to be in. It's different. I think it's a good healing time. It's like moving forward, and it's the holidays. There's going to be, you know.
There's no happier time to be there.
And exactly.
Yeah. Oh, I'm excited for you and everybody.
And one of my favorite things is and I think they do this every, like, most recent administrations. One of the big Christmas trees has all the 50 states on it, an ornament for each.
Oh, cool.
So it's always fun to find, like, I'm from California, to find, like, where the California ornament is.
At the party, everyone takes a photo with the first family, generally, right?
Yes.
So that'll be nice. You can take a photo with the person you're criticizing often, but it'll be good.
Listen, I'm an equal opportunity critic and praiser.
Yes.
I have very real concerns about Joe Biden's ability to win re-election again, and that scares me because I think it allows a very dangerous man to potentially be president. But I give Joe Biden a lot of credit on how he's handled Israel and how he's handled Ukraine. So you win some, you lose some.
Yeah, there you go. No, you're a straight shooter. I think that's fine. Today's podcast is brought to you by Shopify. Ready to make the smartest choice for your business? Say hello to Shopify, the global commerce platform that makes selling a breeze. Whether you're starting your online shop, opening your first physical store, or hitting a million orders, Shopify is your growth partner. Sell everywhere with Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system. Turn browsers into buyers with Shopify's best converting checkout, 36% better than other platforms. Effortlessly sell more with Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Did you know Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and supports global brands like Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen? Join millions of successful entrepreneurs across 175 countries backed by Shopify's extensive support and help resources. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Start your success story today. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/view. Put it all in lowercase. Go to shopify.com/view now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/view.
This is Sunny Hostin. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every single day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/view. Just go to Indeed.com/view right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/view. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now, yesterday, Joy told a story, speaking of the former president, about talking to Trump supporters outside of Trump Tower and wanting to understand where they were coming from. Did you hear the story?
Yes.
Okay, so...
But share with the highlight of it is the end.
The highlight of it is as she left these people who she had not told who she was, one of them yelled after her, you know, you could be a hot Joy... She said... the way I originally heard the story was, you could be a hot Joy Bahar.
Which they probably did mispronounce.
Yeah, because I usually see it when people don't know her. And then she yelled back, I am a hot Joy Behar.
Okay. Two things. Joy cannot help herself. She has to engage.
I
have heard so many stories about her engaging like Trump supporter types. Also, she is a hot Joy Behar. The most common thing I hear from people who see her in real life is they're like, she looks so good. I love this for her. I think that we talked about this off air with the audience the other day. Like on TV, people can kind of they think of you as maybe a bit one dimensional. Like I'm the Republican, right. So I must be this. You know, Whoopi's a liberal actress, so she must be this. We're all multifaceted people with a lot of different interests, a lot of different ideas. I talk about politics less than most people, except when I'm like actually on the clock to do so.
Yeah.
So I actually think it's fun to engage people who disagree with you. You can learn from them. But I also have found almost universally once people actually like talk to me as a human and not just as like a talking head on TV, you can find some level of common ground or at least like a mutual like, okay, we're, you know.
I mean, generally speaking, all of us have people in our lives that don't feel the same
way
we do about politics or anything else, family, friends, everything else. So
that's what's stunning to me when people are surprised, like, how can you sit at a table with those ladies? I was like, I do it any day that I go to lunch with girlfriends or members of my family. Yeah. I've never been someone who only hangs out with Republicans. That would A, be boring. B, like, it's life. I've always had friends all over the political spectrum.
Joy does just jump right into those conversations, though. And I'm looking the other way. I want to walk away. Like, no, but I got
it. But it's funny because I also think that I think the people she engages kind of like it, too.
Of course they
do. There's a mutual, yeah.
Yeah, she likes to spar, basically.
Exactly.
It's what she lives for.
She lives for it.
Yeah, and it's just who she is. Well, God bless. All right, so speaking of Trump, you've been wanting to talk about how journalists don't understand how to cover him. It's mm-hmm. a conversation that is ongoing, I think, throughout the last years. What do you think journalists are getting wrong?
I really wanted to ask Brian Stelter this, but we ran out of time. So Trump is he's a master manipulator and he's a showman. The only, you know, consistent talent, if I could say, that I've seen in Donald Trump is he's a showman. He's somebody who he walks into a room, and this may be surprising for some people to hear, but he can be gregarious. He can light up a room. He can be self-deprecating. He can have a sense of humor, and he's good at working people over. And I've seen time and time again where he sat down for interviews, and clearly he's put on the Trump charm because I just don't see the level of pushback that needs to be there. I think that honestly the only way that works to for a mainstream objective journalist to interview him is a pre-taped format that allows them to go in and fact check throughout afterward and post-production. Mm-hmm. Because even when he espouses something, he lies so incessantly that you would be interrupting every 2 seconds. I think my friend Caitlin Collins, who I think did as good of a job as anyone can on live television in, you know,
that infamous CNN
town hall, when you've got a crowd cheering for him. But you would literally be interrupting every other sentence if you do it live. So I think you do the interview and then you add context for the listener. The other thing that I've been frustrated by is almost the downplaying of how he's covered. So there was this piece in The New Yorker that was incredibly important about how he wants to expand the role of the U.S. military domestically. Dangerous. He wants to use it to, you know, quell political disagreement and protest, things that would be unprecedented in America. But the headline was like, wants to expand the role of the U.S. military. Like it was. And so in our clickbait culture where people, you know, they're not going to read the 1,000-word New Yorker piece necessarily. You've also got to get to the point. You've got to contextualize it and explain when something is unprecedented to the layperson who may not understand the full implications of it.
Right.
But I do think you have to engage Trump. Where I disagree with some folks is this idea of like,
Don't give him a platform.
He is the GOP frontrunner. You know, tens of millions of people voted for him once. Tens of millions will likely, if he's the nominee, vote for him again. So you just need to be prepared to challenge him and have receipts ready.
So in a hypothetical world where he's coming to The View to be at the table, you would be...
Oh, that would give me such anxiety. But you know what? This sounds crazy to say. I wouldn't rule out that he would want to.
Right.
I don't know what our like editorial standards would be, but he has an obsession with the show. I think he knows how iconic it is. He did love Barbara Walters.
He was a frequent guest back in the day. Melania had co-hosted.
Yeah, he's and he pays attention to it. I remember when I worked for him, he'd you know come back with, "Can you believe what they were saying on The View?" And he understands that's a powerful platform. We reach so many people, but that would be very hard to do because it's live. But I think you'd have to be very intentional with your questions mm-hmm. and specific with your wording, so he can't dance around it. I think, you know, it'd have to be kind of a concerted effort where everyone's prepared to kind of jump in and fact check as we go.
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation, whether it would ever happen or should happen or anything else.
He would have mean things to say to me, I'm sure.
I mean, I have no doubt.
Loser.
Yeah. Well, finally, I want to get your thoughts on George Santos, because the House is expected to vote tomorrow on whether to expel him after the scathing House ethics report. What are your predictions on how this goes?
So my cautious prediction is he does get expelled. All Democrats are going to vote for it. It needs a 2/3 majority vote to be expelled. I think there's enough Republican momentum that would basically require about half of the Republican conference to support mm-hmm. it. The entire New York delegation of Republicans has called for his expulsion. It's an interesting dynamic because while it's bad in the immediate for the House Republicans if he leaves because it makes their threshold even smaller.
Right.
It's actually better for them in the long run. So like one of the top targets of the DCCC, the Democrats House campaign arm, is Mike Lawler, who is a super strong moderate member, represents like white, like pardon, he's a New York member. he's a top target. And one of the reasons is he's having to defend getting asked about George Santos. He's getting lumped in with, you know, the jokes right. and the idiocy. And he wants to see him gone because he wants serious people elected. I think getting rid of Santos helps Republicans present themselves as more serious, and it's better for their reelection chances, even if it's bad in the immediate as far as passing votes go.
That's interesting.
Listen, I was on CNN with a really smart gentleman, Van Lathan, who's actually he co-hosted a podcast with Rachel Lindsay. Mm-hmm. He made a point that I thought That's was terrific. Spot on about George Santos. He's like, I actually think he's helpful in the sense that he's the caricature of the unseriousness of our politics. And he's like, I actually think that, you know, you get rid of him and you're able – others are allowed to present themselves as a little more serious and not as Looney Tunes, when in reality more and more members of Congress are running to be like political influencers and not actually to govern. So it kind of gives them a pass if they get rid of him,
right.
Which I just thought was an interesting kind of flip side of it. And I should mention, if he is expelled, I think for consistency's sake, I do think Senator Bob Menendez, who's been federally indicted – I think he should resign. I think if he has had a shred of integrity and dignity, he would for the good of the Senate.
I'm very excited to do a Sonny Hostin-esque legal note. Both George Santos and Bob Menendez have denied any criminal wrongdoing. All right. Well, I'm thrilled to have you back in the chair. We'll see you again soon. Tomorrow's show is going to be a good one. We have John Fetterman on.
I'm excited Senator about that.
Yeah. And then we have more fun to come, and the dogs are approaching. So
I am so excited for the dog show.
All right, me too. Thank you for joining me, Alyssa. Tomorrow I'll be back with Anna Navarro, and see you soon.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.